My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
The following is a high-five moment from highfivecasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High five!
High five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at highfivecasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical bill expert, finding savings can seem impossible. Well, HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. So start saving with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The world as we know it is ending. But what comes next? Well, if you've been following my work for a while, you know I talk a lot about this pendulum that's swinging back and forth, three revolutionary cycles that are converging right now that show us why the world is so crazy. The world as we know it is ending. The world that we're going into is not the one we're leaving behind. But what comes next? And that's the topic for today's conversation with Peter Zion. He just recently wrote the book called The End of the World is Just the Beginning. And we're going to discuss my thesis, his thesis in the book, and how they work together. And we're going to talk about how this deglobalization works. Depopulation, deglobalization, and what the world looks like after that. The end of the giant nation state. Will China even be around by the end of the decade, or will they take over the world? He has some strong opinions about that. We're going to talk about Russia, Ukraine. We're going to talk about the oil and gas situation in Russia. He thinks it's a dire situation that's going to disrupt the entire world. We're going to talk about the United States energy sector that we have. We're going to talk about the politics and what's going to happen with the political system in the United States, influence of China and other nations, things like that. We're going to talk about technology and so much more. This is a conversation I was super excited for, I was looking forward to, and we finally had it. I can't wait to get into it. So here we go. Peter, anyway, thank you for joining me today. I'm super excited to have you.
Not a problem. Glad to be here.
I love the work that you've done. I love your thesis that you have about the world kind of breaking apart or decentralizing. The name of your new book, The End of the World is Just the Beginning. And I've been working on this thesis of three revolutionary cycles combining and coming together, converging, and moving the world from centralization to decentralization. And yours fits along with that, but with inches and inches of data to back it up. and with a little bit of some different angles. So, you know, I've binge watched a bunch of your interviews and read into the book. And so I guess just give us a high level view. I don't want to spend a lot of time, but maybe a high level view of the end of the world is just the beginning.
Sure. Well, the issue is that the world that we understand that was formed at the end of World War II, that's what's ending here. It's not like we're all going to die, although not all of us are going to make it to the other side of this. Globalization at its core was a bribe. We provided global security for our allies if in exchange they allowed us to write their security policies when it came to the Cold War. And that exchange lasted until the Cold War ended in 1992. And ever since then, the Americans have been losing interest in electing ever more populist presidents right up to and including the current one. So our interest in maintaining that network has failed. And since it was a bribe, we never invested our economy in the global network. If we had, it wouldn't have been a bribe. So we are capable of stepping back from that system and our economy more or less being okay, but everyone else is getting whapped up the side of the head. That's kind of half of it. The other half of it is when globalization happened, the world urbanized. And when you move from the farm into the cities, you have fewer kids. You play that forward for 70 years, and it's not that we're running out of children. That happened 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're now running out of adults. And so the very theoretical underpinnings of any sort of trade-based economic system ultimately requires consumption. Right. And we no longer have the people to do that.
Yeah. So I've been following Harry Dent's work for a long time. He wrote a book called The Demographic Cliff, talking about the demographics and the problems there. So I've been kind of kind of in tune to that a little bit. But starting with this first point that you made about the bribe of security. And so you make the case that the U.S. has basically entered into agreement with the world where we'll provide all the security for the world, which has allowed this free trade to happen and this globalization to happen. Would you say, though, that it maybe started much longer than that, maybe with the start of the Industrial Revolution, which then brought people into the cities and factories and then kind of started up all of this global trade?
Oh, it wouldn't have happened without the Industrial Revolution. I don't mean to suggest otherwise. I'm just saying that it took globalization to take industrialization global. Okay. The Industrial Revolution originally was in the United Kingdom, but really just in the Greater London area. And then it spread to Germany and the United States and a handful of European countries, but never into the countryside. Most of the world didn't really get down to the serious work of industrializing the secondary cities until the war. And in the case of the countryside, most of the advanced world didn't finish the process until the 1960s. Mm-hmm. So it took global security to enable true globalization to occur.
Is that because the seas were just unsafe, too many pirates and et cetera, you know, ships going down, and so that we couldn't really get the free trade that we wanted? Because
Number one is technology. If you're dealing with wooden sailing vessels, the sea is a very dangerous place. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until later, in kind of the second phase of globalization, that we had merchant shipping in metal. And that is just in the last century. I'm sorry, it was just in the 20th century. That's relatively new. Also, originally, a lot of the industrial technologies were all about military conflict. And so they would cause more disruption than would save. And in those first handful of countries, most notably the Brits, that were enabled to industrialize, they could basically use industrialization like a crowbar to beat potential colonies or foes into submission, and it wasn't deliberately shared with the rest of the world. It took some time for those technologies to leak out. And then, of course, we had the world wars, and that is when America rewired the rules.
By providing the security to open up the free trade.
Right.
What about the financial side of things? So it seems like in the United States and through maybe since 1971 really accelerated with the world getting off the gold standard and moving into more of a fiat money standard or system, that seemed to kind of force the United States to offshore a lot of its globalization or a lot of its manufacturing base, maybe to offset that inflation, which also sped up the globalization.
I wouldn't say that it was because of globalization that we went to fiat. Well, let me rephrase that.
No, I'm saying fiat sped up the deglobalization or the globalization because it was forced to offshore its manufacturing.
The United States was never forced to offshore anything. That was honestly a side effect of the choice of globalization. Before globalization, the only countries that would be technologically advanced were the ones that had a geography that allowed them to generate most of what they needed internally, and then they would use that strength to venture out to get the things that they didn't have. Those were the empires. What globalization did was allowed everyone to play without having to have that military component. So you could have been a secondary colony, but all of a sudden you can engage in global trade. And when everyone could play, value added expanded, people both diversified and specialized and got into more and more value added manufacturing. So the need for a financial system to lubricate all of that internally to a country and internationally in terms of trade exploded. And in that sort of an environment, gold couldn't fly. Every successful asset-backed currency we have known in human history has ultimately collapsed because they ran out of the material that backed it. And if we were suddenly dealing with growth rates that were just explosive, the global system grew more between 1945 and 1970 than throughout the entirety of human history. There was never going to be enough gold to back all of that. Fiat, whether for better or for worse, based on your own personal politics, was the only answer, the only approach that might have worked. So far, so good.
Yeah, I would agree. Gold doesn't work because specifically because it doesn't move over space very well, right? Trying to get it across continents doesn't work. And then trying
that
to.
Too.
Yeah, that too. I'll come back to that. But I want to talk about some of the points that you've made. I'd like to dig into China for a minute. A lot of people are afraid that China's taking over the world and they're going to own and control everything. And you've made the case that China won't even be around by the end of the decade. The demographics is a big piece of it. They're not self-sufficient with food, energy, water, et cetera. Let's talk about that. So you say that they won't be around at the end of the decade. Fill us in on that.
Well, let's start with demographics. The same process of having fewer kids happened as the Chinese industrialized, just as what happened with everybody else. But where with the United States it took place relatively slowly over roughly 200 years, they've done it in 40. So they've gone from living on subsistence rice farms to living in condos in a single generation. And as a result, their birth rate has gone from something like 6 to 7 per woman to now less than 1 in most of the major cities.
Right.
Shanghai and Beijing actually have the lowest birth rates of any cities in any era, and they're going down, not up. You add in the one-child policy on top of that, and we're dealing with a population which is already in the stages of advanced collapse. The Chinese population undoubtedly peaked more than 10 years ago, and they are now on track to have less than half their current population as soon as 2050, and that assumes that nothing goes wrong with those all-important energy and food imports. So yes, this is a system, this is a culture that is facing abject collapse in the not-too-distant future. Then, of course, there's the broader geopolitical environment. Globalization was basically made for countries like China, countries that had never really been fully functional or economic entities in their own right. They were always preyed upon by outsiders or broken apart due to internal conflict. Globalization, for all intents and purposes, ended all that. And this has been the most unified that the Chinese system has ever been in the 3,500-year-long history of the Han Chinese people. All the Americans have to do if they want to wreck it is go home. And we're in the process of doing that right now. China imports 3/4 of their energy, and 3/4 of that comes from the Persian Gulf or further abroad. And they utterly lack the naval capacity in order to protect their own supply lines. And even if they could protect their own supply lines, the world is turning populist. Nobody wants to be dependent upon Chinese goods anymore. So everything that has spelled Chinese success since 1980 has now come violently unwound, in part because of Chinese actions, and there's no way they walk away from this.
So it seems like, I mean, it's data, right? So the demographics is data. So I agree with you, right? I mean, no matter what they do, they can't get that population back for 30-40 years. And then to your point, they don't have the energy, et cetera. But it seems like they've been on this, like, colonization, if you will, right, where they've made long-term deals for energy, 30-year deals for natural gas or for oil or for food. You know, they've moved heavily into Mexico, Central America, et cetera. Can they offset that by even their population, maybe by, you know, immigration or using people in other countries and then with these long-term deals they've had for supplies?
Well, let me kill a couple of those squirrels, and then we'll get into the bigger issues. When you spend $12 billion for a $2 billion asset, that isn't investment. That is capital flight. That is some Chinese bureaucrat who's figured out a way to out to cheat his own system and get money out for another day when it's finally his time to leave. We saw a lot of this in the late Soviet period as well. So anything that touches One Belt, One Road, anything that looks like an asset that the Chinese are purchasing but they don't know how to operate, that is all capital flight. That's Chinese voting against their own system and basically taking money from the government and squirreling it away for themselves for a rainy day.
So are these examples like where they built deep water ports or they built airports or things like that you're referring to?
Right. Yeah, I mean, some of them might fall into a slightly different category, but probably 80% of it is capital flight.
Okay.
Especially if they're purchasing a pre-existing asset.
But don't they still have control over that asset then for the oil?
Not really. One of the things we've seen with One Belt, One Road is every single country but one is refusing to pay back the loans. They're even denying that they were ever loans in the first place. They're like, yeah, no, these were grants. We're going to keep this money. Thanks much. The one country, the one exception, is Sri Lanka, which is in a state of abject civil collapse right now. So I would not expect payments on that debt to continue for all that much longer.
Okay. So the long-term deals they've made for energy, for example, then you think those will just fall apart? They weren't really...
Well, and that's another squirrel. I mean, okay. This is not how energy deals are made. If you sign a contract, sure, but it's not like you pay for it all up front. Mm-hmm. You pay for it as you get it. It's just it's a slightly different way of handling the accounting. It really doesn't signal nearly as much of a commitment as people like to think. The only countries that do it in large scale are Russia and China. And it's difficult to come up with two methods of accounting that the rest of the world broadly has no interest in following.
So then you think that although China may have made long-term deals with Iraq or Afghanistan or Russia or whatever country on these commodities over long periods of time, they're just contracts that would probably be eventually broken?
Well, I would say all the ones that they've done to this point have been broken. Whether it's because they were being upgraded or downgraded is kind of irrelevant. It's just... It's a flashy headline. It is negotiated at the top, and then it's handed down to the bureaucrats, and so that's a 30-year deal, but it's very rare for them to last more than four or five.
Well, wouldn't those nations still need to sell those assets,
sure,
those commodities?
You can sell it on the spot market to the Chinese just fine, or when 3 or 4 years go by and you realize you either need more or you need less, you sign a new 30-year deal, and it's once again all the news. And by the time we get to the next cycle, everyone's forgotten the first two. So, this is pretty common.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
High Five Casino.
High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at high5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
An October morning in a quiet suburb in a town in Scotland. A man is walking his dog when suddenly shots are fired from a car. The man falls to the ground and the car speeds off. An ordinary residential area, but extraordinary things happen in ordinary places.
The instinct right away was it was a political thing.
We're talking about Russian-trained, high-ranking officer in the Secret Service.
An Assassin Comes to Town, a six-part podcast. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
So China, again, needing to import their 75% of their energy and have the deals to do it today, you think that at some point they just can't get the energy they're going to need?
Well, the Chinese lack the military capacity to protect their own import lines. That's the United States doing that. And to think that the United States is going to bleed and die in a naval conflict so that China can get oil, that strikes me as a bad bet.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. What about, and then on the population side, if they lowered their population, obviously it makes sense. If you lower population, you have less progress, I'm guessing, less innovation, which they don't have a lot of anyway because maybe communism. But couldn't they leverage some of these people in these emerging markets for their people to produce the goods that they're importing? Or does it all hinge off of
innovation
the...
innovation real quick.
Yeah.
To a degree, the Chinese get a bad rap when it comes to innovation. Now, they have a very small cadre of very smart people who are actually pretty good at innovating, particularly when it comes to software and with big data stuff. When you get down into manufacturing, that's where it starts to fall apart. They can't make the machines that allow them to make the cheap goods. So they have a small cadre that's very good, but it's not large enough to train the people that are a step down. So we will continue to hear about the Chinese making breakthroughs in big data related tech, but it's everything else, the nuts and bolts, that's where they do not excel at all. In terms of immigration, it's a big boulder to try to find a lever for. There were 1.4 billion Chinese, well, with the data revisions, there's 1.3 billion Chinese, and now the majority of them are aged 45 and over. So the scale of immigration that they would have to encourage and allow is more than the total mobile population of the world at the moment. They would have to grab every would-be migrant from everywhere. And the only country that might be able to provide enough ballast to help the Chinese up with that would be India. The country that arguably is the most hostile to the very concept of cooperation with the Chinese on anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about, this is jumping into more of a political side of things, but it seems that they've done a pretty good job politically of maybe getting a lot of influence inside the United States. Maybe the enemy is within the gates, so to speak. Maybe some other countries as well. Do you think there's any control and influence that maybe the United States government itself might be subject to China?
If you had told me this or asked me this 4 years ago, I probably would have broadly agreed, but wow, times change. The Donald Trump administration, there were a lot of things about them that I was not thrilled at, but the need to rebalance the relationship with China was definitely something that needed to be done, and it's been continued under Biden. COVID turned a lot of people in the United States off on all things Chinese, especially when it became apparent that the Chinese knew about the bug and had prevented flights from originating in Wuhan landing anywhere else in China, but they still allowed international flights.
Right.
I mean, that was a dick move. There's no way around that. the Chinese going into this wolf warrior diplomacy pissed off everyone. And now pretty much every foreign academic center in the entire Western world has been shut down. All those Confucian institutes are gone. So I don't mean to suggest that there's nothing residual out there, but just the mass cultural rejection of all things Chinese government related, and with the Chinese taking steps to make it much worse than it needed to be, I'm really not concerned about that anymore. I mean, there's a competition going on in Congress who can be more anti-Chinese. This is not the sort of situation that I'm overly concerned about foreign influence, especially since the Chinese have been so ham-fisted about it. It's very easy to root this out, and it's being rooted out quite aggressively. I'd say we're well past 80% at this point.
So do you think, I saw a headline today, China demands that the U.S. cancel arms sales to Taiwan. They demanded that today.
Oh, that's adorable.
Why is that adorable?
Well, just to think that what the Chinese want is to be able to dictate everyone to accede to their security and economic preference, but with absolutely no reciprocal action. They really have started drinking their own Kool-Aid, so to speak. Part of it's a government thing that comes or up with every generation or two of China. The country is very large. It's very diversified in terms of worker quality and geography. And as a result, the central government having been able to exact its writ throughout the entire territory has always been a problem. There's always been this struggle between regional power centers and national. Unfortunately, they've never been able to find a balance. Either the regional power centers overwhelm the center and the country splits apart into warring fiefdoms, that's most of their history, or the center succeeds in reining in the local ones and it becomes a dictatorship in which all dynamism and all creativity is destroyed in favor of a cult of personality. And that's where we are now. So Xi has executed or exiled or imprisoned pretty much everyone in the country who's capable of independent thought at this point. And we're not seeing any flexibility in policy, and all of the bureaucrats have now fallen into one of two categories. Number one, the ones who won't do anything unless they are told in writing, and so we have stasis. Or those who hear about something that Xi said on TV or saw it on a billboard, and they like go into their own zealotous interpretation of what they think the boss wants, and they go a little batshit. So, for example, you have seen undoubtedly the armies of people in hazmat gear spreading lime on highways and airport runways. You know, that's obviously idiotic, but that's what policy looks like in China now. And so they're just hitting their head over and over into the wall until something cracks, and that something is not going to be the United States.
So I'm going to move on to the other part of the world. But before we do, so I think you said China won't be around by the end of the decade, or they won't be the nation state that we know now. So do you see them just over the next several years just kind of starting to continue to lose influence, lose favor in the world, and just kind of shrinking? And or what do you see happening by 2030?
Yeah, there's a lot of if-then statements wrapped up in that question. There's a robust historical database in China of how everything can go to hell very, very quickly for internal reasons. And because of the demographic situation, we know that their consumption and export model can't survive the decade. They just don't have the people to even attempt it. But that doesn't mean that demographics is what's going to put the bullet in the head. It could be an energy crisis. It could be a food crisis. It could be government collapse. It could be Xi slipping in the shower and falling on some bullets. You have to understand, though, is that there's no way out of this where China survives. Now, an entity this large, how it dies matters.
Sure.
But the biggest impact we are likely to see in the Western Hemisphere is the sudden loss of manufactured goods. And that is something, while painful, that we can adapt to. The loss of, or the disruptions to energy and agricultural markets, I don't think are things that we would feel all that heavily here. We have a largely self-contained system.
Good points. So if we jump to the other side of the world, then if we go to, well, maybe the same side of the world, somewhat the east, but Russia. And so obviously that's big news, Russia and Ukraine, and the whole world's trying to sanction Russia, but apparently we still need their energy. It looks like Russia is still outputting the same amount of energy, if not even more energy than they were pre-war. It seems like maybe a lot of these sanctions are just lip service, if that. But I've heard you talk about that they're actually being impacted very heavily, and maybe they might have to shut down their oil and gas industry, and it could permanently impair them.
Well, let's start long and work to short term. So longer term, Halliburton, Schlumberger, BP, all the super majors, all the oil companies of the West have left. The Russians don't have the technical skill to operate most of their own fields, especially the further east and the further north you go. So we know long term that at least half of Russian output is going to fall off. Now, whether that's in 3 months or 3 years or 10 years, I don't know. We've never had this degree of technical divorce before.
Are there not other technical workers that could fill their spot, like Chinese or Saudis that know how to get oil out of the ground?
Nope. If the Chinese could do it themselves, they would be doing it already. And the Saudis rely on the West as well. Also, Saudi fields are not nearly as complicated as what's going on in Russia. Also, the Saudis don't work, they bring in foreigners to do it for them. So they wouldn't know where to begin.
So without the U.S. technical expertise, there's no one else to fill
that. I would say just the U.S. It's U.S., U.K., a mix of Europeans, a handful of Japanese.
Okay. But those are the main countries that are really on board the sanctions. So without their help, then there's not really anyone to replace that.
And remember, none of this was a sanctions issue. This is companies boycotting.
Right.
That's far more powerful. If you've got sanctions, companies will, to a degree, try to find ways around them. But when it comes from the corporate entities themselves, it's over.
Okay. Does it seem like the numbers actually haven't dwindled down? They're still outputting pretty strong?
Putting out the caveat for Russian data, the best guess is over the course of the first month, output dropped by between 1 and 1.5 million barrels a day, but that has steadily been built back, and best guess is they are within arm's reach of where they started. What has happened is the Europeans, whether it's because of sanctions or boycotts, aren't buying Russian crude, so the Russian crude has to get loaded into small tankers on their western periphery. There has to be a sea-to-sea transfer at some point, where it gets loaded onto a larger vessel that can then make the trip to East Asia and South Asia. India is the country that is by far buying more and has almost single-handedly made up for the oil shipments that used to go to Europe.
And I think that also has something to do with this kind of a game of chicken maybe that Germany is playing with Russia, where the Nord Stream pipeline got shut down for service right now. Will it come back on? Will it not? But if Germany were to stop buying natural gas from Russia, that might hurt Germany for a year. But once it's replaced, then Russia has no one else to sell it to. So do you think Russia would be... Go ahead.
That's the debate going on within Germany right now, is how much pain can they take and how much can it be concentrated. So German industry does not work like the United States. The United States has a very diversified system, and we're relatively agnostic about where we get our various inputs, and most of our inputs do come from within the North American system or even the American system. But Germany has to import all of its raw materials that aren't coal, and natural gas specifically is the basis of the system. In Germany, they bring in the natural gas. Some is used for power, but the majority of it is used for heavy industry in order to make chemicals and plastics and industrial base materials. Those base materials are not exported. They are then used within Germany to make their heavy manufacturing and their medium manufacturing, which then they use to make their light manufacturing. So it all has the same base. And if that energy flow stops, there is no alternative. And even if the Germans succeed in bringing in stuff from elsewhere, whether it's piped gas from the North Sea or liquefied natural gas from the Western Hemisphere, it will be at a much, much higher price point. The Germans are already paying about six to eight times for their natural gas now that they were at the start of the war. And so the entire German manufacturing model is already under duress and might not be economically viable. If they don't take the cheap stuff that's nearby, that can't be redirected. You have to have a pipeline for that, and that takes years. So you're looking at Russian natural gas in this environment potentially just falling off the market, in which case the Germans see prices go up by that much more. So this, even if it succeeds, you're looking at a massive hit to German industry. Now, the Russians can make it worse, and Nord Stream is where that factors in. So on the 11th of July, the Russians shut it down. They say it's going to be back after maintenance on the 22nd. We will see. But on July 17, the Russians declared force majeure on the entire pipeline. That's not a maintenance question. They're saying that, nope, we just can't meet contracts at all. What they're trying to do is pull Germany out of the NATO coalition on Ukraine. And since Germany is the home of the major logistic hubs that Americans use to get stuff further east, without Germany, there is not a war in Ukraine that we can support. So will this work for the Russians? I don't know. I mean, if you'd asked me on the 21st of February, the day before the war started, I would have said, of course it's going to work. The Germans have sided with the Russians on every security and energy question for 30 years. They have caved every time. But so far, they're not. So I'd give it a 50-50 chance, and we're going to know real soon. The Germans are presented with a choice. You can remain industrialized, but be neutral on Ukraine, which means we get it, or we can cut off the energy and you can deindustrialize, at least in part, and see a catastrophic reduction in your standard of living for at least the next 2 decades. This is not a decision I would like to have to make.
Wow, 2 decades. And Russia would be okay losing that Germany as a customer?
The Russians would always prefer more energy sales than less, but you know, this is a country that prides itself on economic privation, so I think they would be fine. Hmm.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sort. High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five.
High Five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at High Five Casino.
.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
A collision between a Chinese jet and an American spy plane.
He came and rammed into our left wing.
With relations increasingly strained, what are the chances of things spinning out of control?
The Western world was asleep.
I'm Gordon Carrera. I'll be exploring the friction in this most important of relationships and asking, has the West taken its eye off the ball?
You cannot ignore China.
From BBC Radio 4, this is Shadow War, China and the West. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
Today, more than ever, we're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical bill expert, finding savings can seem impossible. And who has the time? HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance and reviews your medical claims as they come in from your healthcare providers. Then, HealthLock's technology flags and alerts you to any errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and frauds to help you and your family save. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from selected past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save more than $130 million. Saving on medical bills starts with knowing where to look, and HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden medical bill errors. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's healthlock.com.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a tough decision. Now, it looks like the EU, and this gets a little bit to more financial decision, but I mean, the EU, the ECB, their banking situation, their bond crisis, like the pigs nations are barely hanging on. And without Germany pulling them forward, the EU could entirely break apart.
Yeah, everything about the European Union is based on this fragile balance that existed at the height of globalization, with the Americans providing total security but asking for nothing in return. Mm-hmm. It was never going to last for the long haul. The question is whether or not this is what kills it.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a video I pulled up of Trump in 2018 talking to Germany and saying, hey, you're asking us to protect you from Russia. You're not paying for it, and now you're giving money to the country we're trying to protect you from.
I know the speech you're talking about, and the Germans ridiculed him, and now they're eating some serious crow. But before we overly condemn the Germans on this, not that we shouldn't,
okay.
You basically described European policy towards Russia for the last 30 years. America protects us from Russia so that we can buy Russian energy. That was always a dubious trade.
Hmm. Always giving money to the person you're trying to protect yourself against. Does seem that way.
Yeah. No. The Germans did it because they know their history, and they know that they have this period. They clash with the Germans, and it generates a horrific war. They make peace, and then they try to find a way forward. And so they do a degree of economic integration, and it never works out. So they clash again. So it's just they have this dance back and forth and back and forth, and we're about to go forth really hard, probably.
Let's jump over to the U.S. and our energy policy. So
sure.
It seems like a lot of the problems we have are self-inflicted, I think we can say that. But I would also say probably in Germany they're somewhat self-inflicted as well. And so the U.S. is self-inflicted energy policy. The Biden administration seems hell-bent on, you know, shutting down our own investments. So we're underinvested in the U.S., so we're not producing as much. And even if we wanted to, we can't just turn it back on right away. Does that sum up kind of where we're at right now?
It takes 3 to 8 years to bring a conventional oil or natural gas field online. So a long time. So if we tripled investment globally today, you're really not looking at an improvement for till 2025.
Right.
But it's different for shale. You can bring a shale well on in 3 to 8 weeks. Now, that was back in 2019 before we had the everything shortage economy. Now it's probably more like 3 to 8 months because we're having shortages of steel and sand and workers and capital just like everything else. Mm-hmm. But still, 3 to 8 months versus 3 to 8 years is night and day difference. So I am not overly concerned about the United States in terms of energy security, especially when you consider that roughly 95% of American energy is produced on private land. And so the federal government has no regulatory authority over it all. Now, could the Biden administration...
Especially with that Supreme Court decision a couple weeks ago?
I don't think it had anything to do with the Supreme Court decision. Or let me rephrase that. I don't think any other court would have ruled differently. This is not an issue of Trump getting three conservatives on the court. There was a similar court action back during the Obama administration on the Clean Air Act, which basically broke the same way with a very different court makeup. There's only so much authority that the federal government has over state and private decision making. That's a bug or a feature based on your politics. Anyway, point being is we've had a massive drop-off in investment globally into fossil fuel production, but not nearly as much in the United States. And if you pair that with the quick turnaround time on U.S. shale wells, I'm really not overly concerned about the United States. Now, could we make it smoother and better? Oh, hell yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you are dealing with an inflationary environment, there are two things you can do. You can reduce demand or you can increase supply. Mm-hmm. Biden administration is attempting to do the opposite, which is, of course, very Argentinian, and I would not recommend it, but that's where we are. But it's not like federal government policy can really shape this space. So even if Biden was going out there and was a cheerleader, that might encourage some financiers to back some additional oil and natural gas production, but I think it would be a difference on the margin rather than at the core. Now, the Biden administration choosing to be relatively hostile to the American energy complex, but then going and trying to bury the hatchet with Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia, that just strikes me as silly. But, you know, one miracle at a time.
You have to take in the stupidity into some of these calculations, it seems like, the silliness, if you will.
I try not to speak too harshly about a sitting president, especially when I look at just the disasters that we had for the two previous.
Yeah.
So, you know, Biden, despite his faults, and he is showing more and more of them by the day, is actually willing to have conversations with people. Even if we might think he makes the wrong decision, that's already better than the last two.
Yeah. You mentioned, I think you said an Argentinian, when you're referring to the U.S. energy. If I was looking at like a Venezuelan like blender, it seems like, you know, when they nationalized the oil industry, things really went downhill fast. And I see a lot of saber rattling from the Biden administration, you know, threatening the refineries if they don't pick up their production. You know, he's going to use every tool in his disposal. And it seems like maybe there's some threats of this nationalization. And it seems like...
I'm not too worried about that. In order to nationalize, we would have to have people outside of the private sector who knew how to do this stuff, and we don't.
Well, but so that didn't stop that Venezuela, right? Venezuela didn't.
It's also unlikely that they would have the sufficient support from Congress to pull that off in the first place. And remember, what went on in Venezuela, the Venezuelan state oil company, PDVSA, it was always a national asset. It was never privatized. What happened in Venezuela was gross mismanagement and ultimately the state seizure of most of the economy, not nationalized, basically taking anything that they could see that had value, declaring it a state asset, and then cronies of first Chavez and later Maduro basically going there, ripping up everything that wasn't bolted down and some of what was and selling it for like scrap on the international market to get a quick kickback, and then they destroyed the industrial plant as a result. We're nowhere close to that. I can be critical of the Biden administration and not be worried at all about that scenario.
Okay, well, that's good. What about the threat of nuclear war? So I grew up under the Cold War. When I was in high school, we saw the USSR fall. It seems like we kind of have like maybe, I don't know, two or three at least, right? We have Russia. We have, I don't know, Israel, Iran.
There's 11 declared.
Okay, 11 declared. Maybe there's always been declared. Are there any critical threats that you see? You think the Russia situation is something that's concerning?
If the Americans and the Russians meet on the field of battle, we now know that the Russians are not all that, and they will be absolutely obliterated. Now, the Russians see the Ukraine war as existential to their survival, so if we do get in that direct clash, we do risk heavy escalation to involve nukes very, very quickly. And so the Biden administration's goal, and I think on this one they're right, is to provide as many weapons as the Ukrainians can use as quickly as possible that do not require an American logistical tail or much training. So they're not going to get an F-35 or an M1 Abrams because, you know, you have to train on that for years, literally years. And logistical tail is important because if we have American convoys with equipment going into Ukraine, they're going to be guarded by American troops with American air power, and then we get that clash. Can't have that. So anything that they can use, they can have, but they have to use it themselves. In that sort of environment, the risk of an escalation is much, much, much lower. The concern I would have for nukes is not with the traditional countries that we think of, the Irans, the North Koreas, the Russias. You use nukes when you think you can't win a conventional conflict.
Right.
And if the United States is stepping back from active management of the world, then your Irans and your Russias are not the secondary powers. They are the primary powers. You have to watch out for the countries that then are concerned about the Russias and the Chinas and the Irans. So I don't worry about North Korea and Iran. I worry about Poland and Sweden and Germany and Saudi Arabia and South Korea and Japan and Taiwan. Countries that fear that if the United States is no longer holding up the ceiling for them, they're going to have to do it themselves and that they will need their own deterrent. And all of these countries have more than enough technical capacity and access to the raw materials to make their own bombs.
So, I mean, haven't Russia said, like, hey, United States, we see what you're doing. We see you're providing intel. You're providing weapons. We consider you're not in a proxy war anymore. Now we consider you're in war with us. We've seen Pelosi and Schiff go over and meet with Ukraine and say, we're going to make sure you have victory, right? And to your point to Russia, it's like the most important thing, they have to win. But the U.S. have assured them that we will be with you until there's victory. And that Russia sees through this proxy. You don't think, as long as we stay out of the country, even though we've seen reports that we have our, you know, operatives in the country, you think they're okay with that?
Yeah, a handful of CIA agents aren't going to flip the balance in terms of the nuclear escalation issue. Also, I think the Russians can read the writing on the wall when it comes to weapon supplies. There's a limited supply of things we can provide the Ukrainians that they can use. We've already given them over a third of our Stingers. We've already given them a third of our Javelins. At the current rate that we are building those out again, it's going to take us years just to replenish what we've already handed over. And we're going to get to the fourth quarter of this year, and there's not going to be much left. So,
and we're going to need some. We're going to need some left.
Well, something's going to need to change. We are not expanding our manufacturing supply chains for the systems they can use nearly fast enough. And when I say we, I don't mean the United States. I mean all of NATO. So we're going to hit a situation probably in the early part of the fourth quarter where we're going to face a large Russian force that is badly trained, badly equipped with low morale, facing off against a Ukrainian force with no weapons. There's no math there. So unless something significant changes in the West or the Ukrainians make some significant battlefield gains that can gut the Russians very quickly, we are nearing a change in this conflict that the Russians cannot lose. We're not there yet. War is all about unpredictability, but it doesn't look great.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five.
High Five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at High Five Casino.
.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. T-I-K-A.com.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
Although you did do a good job predicting that this war would actually come to a head quite a long time ago because Russia was going to need to expand their borders and protect themselves down there. So you did do a good job of predicting it, and I understand it is unpredictable. But so do you see that Russia, you think, finally takes control of Ukraine and the rest of the world is just kind of okay with that? Or maybe Russia says, okay, fine.
The rest of the world is not okay with it, but yes, if I was a betting man, I would think that the Russians are going to win the war. I'm guessing that they're going to crush the conventional resistance this year and then be able to move with relative speed to conquer the rest of the country within several months. That doesn't mean that the war is over. That just means it becomes a purely partisan conflict at that point. Now, the challenge for NATO, the challenge for the United States is Ukraine has never been what it's all about. Ukraine is simply on the path to the territories that the Russians actually want. They want to be able to plug the access points to Russian lands. That means taking a big sliver of Romania and about half of Poland, as well as all of the Baltic states. So once the Russians feel secure in Ukraine, then they have to go to war with NATO directly. And that's when the nuclear threat becomes very real, because the Russians know they can't win a conventional fight against NATO. So it is in America's best interest to keep Ukraine in the fight as long as possible, however possible. The question is whether or not we're going to have the weapon systems to do that. And that is the big unknown.
Hmm. Okay. Let's jump over to the last topic that I have here, which is technology, which we kind of started out with in the beginning. And you talked about technology and how that's kind of changed the world. So, for example, steel, having steel for ships. So steel was a technological revolution, and it gave us ships, it gave us the ability to build skyscrapers and bridges.
You're going to have to say that question again. I lost you.
Okay. I was saying, so let's jump over to the last topic, which is technology. And you started talking about technology earlier, and you started talking about how the world changed, and we had steel for ships. So steel was a technological revolution. It allowed us to have these seafaring ships. And when you go back through history, you see it always seems to be technology that changes the balance of power and then kind of changes the way the world works. So the gunpowder revolution comes to mind, or maybe the knights getting stirrups where they could fight from a horse, and then you have the gunpowder revolution. The industrial revolution brought people, you know, centralized people into cities and factories, steel for ships, etc. You made the case about money and asset-backed money and how asset-backed money would never work. We have a situation where not only are we seeing all these things change in the world, but we're also seeing like the seems like maybe the end of the fiat money system as we know it today. Debt levels are so high. We talked about the bond problems over in Europe. Maybe with the seizure of, you know, whatever happened with the Russian FX reserve accounts, you know, Zoltan Pozsar talks about going from inside money to outside money, back to asset-backed money, things like that. But we have technology that can now potentially fix that as well. So in a world where you kind of project where we're back to these kind of like smaller island nation states, if you will, instead of this globalized world where each nation still needs to have global trade, how do we trust a system that could be seized like the Russians? And it seems like the only inevitable way moving forward to be have some sort of like a decentralized ledger that nobody could control.
Nobody has an interest in that.
Okay.
No, if the goal is to get financial security, having a decentralized ledger is a horrible idea because you're vulnerable to anyone who might be able to wreck it for any reason. Now, it's we're going back to currency blocks, most likely. Now, whether that is asset-backed or fiat depends upon the pros and cons of the political and economic system of each individual zone. I don't think fiat's going anywhere. It's not that it doesn't have risk. It's not that it's not potentially inflationary if it's managed badly. It's that there's really no other game in town. There isn't enough precious metals that is available to back a large-scale asset system anymore, unless we had significant economic dialing back, and I'm talking like an unwinding of 80% of the growth we've seen in the world since 1945.
Couldn't they just move it to $50,000?
I don't think it's going to be that bad for most of us.
Couldn't they just raise it to $50,000 an ounce or $100,000 an ounce, and we'd always have enough. We'd just have to revalue the gold.
That doesn't make it very fungible. When the asset itself explodes in value like that, it gets completely removed from the system. And so anything that has an industrial use, and gold has an industrial use, can't play.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem with having a commodity money that drives the value.
And if you're going to assign an artificial value to something, you just described fiat to me.
But the difference is that every fiat that we've ever had goes back to management. So you said it's always if it's mismanaged, which it always has been, right, because of manpower. So man always seems to mismanage it, which is why every fiat is always lost, which is why a commodity that requires some restraint, like a gold standard, would work better.
Well, you have to separate fiat pre-Bretton Woods and post. Pre-Bretton Woods fiat systems were the countries that, for whatever reason, couldn't play in the asset-backed world, and those all went to shit. In the post-Bretton Woods system, you're really talking about one currency. Everyone's currencies out there are basically backed by the U.S. dollar, and the U.S. dollar is fiat.
Right.
Now, could we make the argument the Fed could do a better job and that U.S. federal governments could do a better job? I don't think that's a hard case to make. But if you compare them to everyone else, the U.S. system has expanded its money supply by a proportion roughly equal to the size of the U.S. economy plus the value of all global trade, and it is very rarely deviated from that. But if you look at the other big currencies, the yuan, the yen, and the euro, and especially the yuan just doesn't do this, it just goes straight up. There's actually almost twice as much yuan in circulation today as there are U.S. dollars, and the yuan is not a currency of exchange. It is not a store of value. It is almost held entirely within the mainland. So you can make the least dirty shirt analogy is probably broadly appropriate, but the other shirts are so filthy
that it makes
the U.S. Fed just look like a paragon of virtue.
I definitely agree with that. But what about like the BRICS nations and them starting to try to build their own financial system if they can't trust the Fed system that they have today? Obviously, like I said, one or three.
Which of the BRICS is in charge of it again?
Well, I don't know. It seems like Russia and China seem to be putting that together.
No. Can't be both. All of the BRICS regularly manipulate their currency in order to achieve their national economic goals. So which one gets to have the currency? And why would the others go for that?
Well, that goes back to the crux of the matter, which is the U.S. has it, but then Russia just had their bank account seized. So how does any country use a system like that?
You know what's happened to U.S. penetration in the financial sector since then? It's gone up.
Well, it's gone up partly because of the dollar getting so strong and the other currency starting to collapse, right? They're all trying to move into the dollar.
It was going up before we had the big surge of 6 weeks ago. There's not an alternative. For better or for worse, if you want to participate in any sort of international trade, you need an intermediate currency that is not regularly involved in the trade. And since the United States never bet its economy on international trade, it really doesn't care what happens to the value of the dollar every day. But the Russians certainly care about what happens to the ruble, and the Chinese absolutely care about what happens to the yuan. That's a trading country cannot be the store of value.
Hmm.
Yeah, I just don't see how it works. And as the world becomes more decentralized and each nation's kind of on their own, and in a Russia situation where they're sanctioned, if they are not able to use the currency, if half the country, half the world is kicked out of the dollar system, then they have to find another system.
Yeah, unless the United States ejects them, which is fair. I would actually expect the U.S. dollar to become more important because the U.S. economy is becoming more and more focused on North America. It is less and less interested in what happens to the wider world economically, and that makes it a better store of value and a better medium of exchange. Now, you kick somebody like Russia out.
Haven't they been kicked out?
For the most part, yeah, especially the central bank. And have you seen how the Russians are handling their trade? They're loading up gold ingots into planes and flying them there. They're back to barter.
Right. So, but they've been kicked out. So you're going to say that throughout. If somebody were to be kicked out, then they'd have to find a new system.
Then they have to find the new system. And the Russians, who have been talking about a non-dollar system for now 35 years, they're doing gold barter because that's the best option they've got. Mm-hmm. Maybe there will be another one in the future, but for right now, this is as good as it gets. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you kick enough people out of a system, and eventually there's a new system formed. I think
that is possible. But yeah. Again, you need to have an impartial arbiter who doesn't care about the value of the currency. And everyone who's talking about moving beyond the dollar is a primary commodity exporter. They deeply care what the currency is.
Right. Right. Yeah. It needs to be a neutral reserve asset. The problem is fiat always becomes political, and it can't stay neutral, it seems like. So it just seems like in a globalized world like we're in today, it seemed to make sense. But as the world seems to break apart, I just don't see how that system works anymore. And to your point, barter doesn't work for sure. So
right. But right now, after dollar fiat, barter is as good as it gets. That's the best economic model to fit it.
Yeah. Okay. Of course, I like the idea of a decentralized ledger that nobody controls. I know you're not a big fan of that. But it just seems it's a neutral asset that nobody can control. And in a world where there's no trust.
Well, we have learned through the Russian sanctions that there is no such thing as a decentralized ledger that anyone controls, because you have to have access to the real financial system, and that can be ended in a day.
What do you mean you have to have real access to the financial system? In order,
if you can't exchange whatever is on the ledger for a currency that you can use in daily affairs, it becomes useless. And so one of the things that was going on between a lot of folks in the cryptocurrency back when the U.S. Fed and the Euros and the Japanese were putting together the sanctions package for the Russian Central Bank is they were told flat out that either you participate in these sanctions completely or you lose access to the real financial world. And, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum and the rest are all interesting and everything, but if you can't actually cash it out anywhere, then they become worthless overnight.
Similar to the ruble. What do you do with a ruble, right?
Yeah, exactly. The ruble is now a completely sequestered currency that is no longer international traded. It doesn't have access to the system, although I might add it doesn't have access to even the Russian financial system anymore. So careful what sort of conclusions you make about ruble strength versus weakness.
Right, but it is getting stronger, but to the point that we're both agreeing to.
It's gotten getting stronger, but good luck, right? Bubble. You can't. Anyone who has rubles can't trade them, and anyone who wants rubles can't get them. So in that sort of environment, it's really no longer a currency.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess time will tell if technology, you know, can slowly grow and get a foothold and then grow. We're seeing it work in nations like El Salvador, but they're very small.
Oh, no, no, God, no, it has not worked in El Salvador.
people are using it to buy Starbucks and McDonald's and pupusas
on
the corner.
Yeah, no, so. El Salvador is going to be applying for an IMF loan before the end of the year. That's ending very, very badly. I don't think it's ending badly because of Bitcoin. I think it's ending very badly for a number of reasons.
Sure. They were already ranked one of the poorest nations in the world long before their Bitcoin foray. So.
Yeah, just don't pin your hopes to that star. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, no, I was only talking about on the part of actually buying goods and services with it is the point I was making. So. All right. Well, man, that was a lot to go through. I really appreciate it. You make me feel a little bit better about China because I've seen this colonization thing that's been scaring me. And then, like I said, the threat to nuclear war. So,
I don't want to make you feel too secure about China. One of the problems with a one-man show is, you know, we know what's going on in Russia. We have tapped Putin's phone. We are reading his email. Xi doesn't talk to anyone. There's no way to find out what he's thinking. We can't tap his brain. So if there is a kind of a black swan risk, that's where it would be.
I do have one more question, a threat. You'd mentioned before, I think it was, maybe it was the Arab Spring. I think Egypt had basically taken themselves off of the internet. And maybe some of the, as this deglobalization happens, some of these nations might be interested in turning themselves into intranets as opposed to being on global internet.
That's basically what the Russians have done.
So China's had this great firewall, but they've never actually decided to take themselves off of the internet. They've just more tried to control the data that comes in and out. But you see the potential of a threat of nations turning into private intranets and taking themselves off this global internet.
Yeah, I think a broad fractioning of the information, fracturing of the information space is kind of cooked in at this point. The question is, how big is the chunk that you can hive off? So, you know, the Western Hemisphere writ large can be its own thing, maybe with a few connections to countries like the UK and Japan, for example. But the idea of a single World Wide Web, I think, is now on its way to the history, or the ash heap of history. Obviously, the countries that you're identifying there are on the more authoritarian side that are likely to face extreme economic pressure, and being able to control the information space for them is a survival prerogative.
They definitely have to control their narrative, which they're losing, so it seems like the next obvious step in a war of information.
That is very important for the Chinese moving forward.
Yeah. All right, well, man, we covered a lot with that. We'll go ahead and end it. The end of the world is just the beginning. It's a thick book with all the data, all the charts, all the graphs. I appreciate all the resources. Everybody should go out and get a copy. We'll link to it down below. Anything else you want to shout out while we got you, Peter?
Well, it's the end of the world we know, not the end of the world. So while it's going to be a mess moving forward, the United States is going to emerge on the other side of this with a manufacturing supply chain that is shorter, simpler, closer to home. Energy and food are going to be fine. We're going to get through this, but it is not going to be a straight, smooth road.
So it's a message of hope. Well, I like it. I like it. With that, we'll sign it off. Peter, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, hopefully you enjoyed that conversation with Peter as much as I did. It was one I was really looking forward to. I recommend everybody go get that book, The End of the World is Just the Beginning. And that's what I got. To your success, I'm out.
High Five Casino. High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas, and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at highthenumber5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And,
Not
to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
That world has eaten up and spit out a lot of young and attractive guys.
This is the story of one of fashion's dark secrets.
I was overwhelmed. Like, I had never seen anything like this.
At the height of Abercrombie & Fitch's success.
This was me being carefully manipulated.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Investigating allegations that would take me into a world of money, sex, and power. This is World of Secrets, Season 1, The Abercrombie Guys.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to have supervision, enhanced hearing, extraordinary reflexes, to be, dare we say, superhuman? Well, Roku's new Pro Series TV can't do any of that for you. But with a 4K screen, side-firing speakers, and a blazing fast refresh rate, it'll sure feel like it. Elevate your entertainment using all your favorite apps like iHeart and play all your music, radio, and podcasts with the new Roku Pro Series. Your senses aren't better. Your TV is.